VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
I want to welcome everybody to the show today, to the show that is not afraid to ask that age-old question. How's your Bitcoin doing?
Depends when you bought it.
Oh, man. Adam and I have been talking for the last couple minutes about all the just stuff that's going on right now. So this show is going to be loaded with stuff, and one part of that stuff is going to be our trivia question, which will be about the market. I'll give that out after the market wrap, not before. But first, I want to welcome everybody back to the show for our regulars. Thanks so much for coming back. And if you happen to be new, either by accident or on purpose, stick around for an hour. You might hear some things you like. You might actually learn a couple of things. There is a lot to understand about what's going on right now, and not all of it is really easy to understand. There's a lot of different opinions on everything. Some of them seem to control the market one week, and then the other side controls the market the next week. What do you do about it? How's it going to impact you? Well, we've got some ideas on those things, as you might expect. Never been at a loss for ideas and opinions.
Nope, and never afraid to share them.
No. So, let's just start by saying it was a short week in which there was probably more activity than in any long week I can think of recently.
Yeah, that was certainly exciting.
It certainly was. Take it away.
Yeah, it was a pretty good week, but it wasn't quite good enough to bring the markets back in the black for the month, or for that matter, for the quarter. The NASDAQ is the only exception to this. It ended the quarter up 2.3%. The large cap Dow is down 2.5% this year, while the broader S&P index is down 1.2%. With the volatility we're seeing in 2018, though, these losses could be erased or doubled next week. You really don't know.
But that's the truth.
It was a really difficult week to get a read on. Monday, we saw the third largest point gain on record on the Dow. It surged 669 points just in one day. Which is crazy.
And the one thing that you could not possibly answer would be the simple word, why?
They attributed it to, again, I think the lack of impending trade wars coming up, which I don't know.
It gets a little specious after a while listening to the excuses.
Exactly. So last week, the market was down on the fear of trade wars, and then over the weekend, suddenly people realized it wasn't going to happen, and so Monday shot up. But who knows if that's true or not, but that's what it was being attributed to. The Tuesday was not so pretty, gave a chunk of that gain back. And then Wednesday was pretty flat. And then Friday, the market at one point, pretty late in the day, was up about 450 points. And then it sold off into the close a little bit, ended up 250 Dow points, so really not bad.
And even better if you look at the S&P and the NASDAQ.
Right. And so if you're feeling a little bit confused as to which direction the market is going, you're not alone. I think the market's pretty confused about where it's going. And until we get to earnings season under the new tax law, which will really get going in a few weeks, I think that we're going to see a little bit more of this volatility.
I agree. There were some interesting things. There are some indices that are what they call market cap weighted. In other words, big companies move the index a lot. And there are some interesting things going on among some very large companies.
Yeah, and it's kind of been the darlings of 2017 that are getting hit right now. So,
yeah, you know, funny thing about fangs, they come to sharp points.
Good point. Yeah, the Amazon had Facebook. A pretty bad week. And really, Facebook is probably in a lot of trouble, I'm thinking.
If, for any of you risk takers out there, if you are the kind that likes to short something, I don't like the looks of what's going on at Facebook.
I don't like
right
it
now
at all.
And if you own any, I certainly would be getting my sell order in for the first thing Monday morning. It's been found out that they were, shall we say, playing favorites and using our personal data to play those favorites.
Which really should come as a shock to nobody.
That is their business model, isn't it?
Exactly. They don't make any money by letting you post dinner pictures for free. I mean, it's just their revenue model is to sell to advertisers and know everything about you so that those advertisers can get their products in front of the right people. That's their business model.
But as usual, the devil is in the details. And some of the details that people sign when they sign up for these things are not exactly in large print. And they're at the bottom of several pages of documentation.
Yeah, definitely. And that's how it always goes. Read the fine print, the old saying.
Yeah. And you know no one ever does.
Right.
Guilty.
Yeah, same here. I mean, do you accept our terms and conditions? Sure.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, of course. And you know exactly. You see everybody using the thing. It's pretty harmless, right? Well, it is until it interferes with the conduct of an open and free election.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that the more we look into our open and free elections, the more problems we're having. And it has finally come to roost in your wallets.
And I also hope that no one out there is getting their election decision-making information from Facebook.
That would be nice.
Bad idea.
Yeah, very bad idea. And then there's the Amazon question. Does Trump really dislike Amazon? Does Amazon dislike everybody? Is Amazon a monopoly? Do they pay enough taxes? Well, I noticed being a Floridian that for quite some time now, since they put bricks and mortar in Florida, they're paying, we're paying sales tax.
You have to. That is a federal law.
And it just turns out that of the 45 states that do collect a sales tax, they pay it to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make them the big bad giant? I think not.
No, and personally, I love Amazon. I use it all the time. And do I feel like it's a monopoly? Absolutely not. There are plenty of alternatives out there.
Walmart is working its butt off to compete. Target is.
And
Wayfair.
Mom and pops are selling on the internet.
They are.
Through eBay, through Amazon.
Yes, a lot of people are partnering up with it. If you don't like it, I have a simple and very effective solution for you. Don't use it.
There you go.
Yeah. So I think when the dust settles on this thing, Facebook's going to shape up its act, and it will probably go along and be as much fun for people as it is now.
Yeah.
It may take some redoing, but
I mean, I think that sentiment is changing. It had been changing prior to all this. Yeah. There's so many more options out there now. And
unlike Amazon, the level of service really, really matters for something like Amazon. Where a Facebook, you know, it replaced MySpace pretty much.
Yeah.
Somebody else can come along and do that. The Instagrams and all that are out there. I'm not a big bull on Facebook, but nor do I think it's going to be eliminated from the face of the earth either.
Yeah, and a lot of kids just don't want to be on the same social network as their parents, and that's
good
what
point.
Facebook is these days.
Very good point. So all in all, what do you think about the upcoming weeks?
Your guess is as good as mine. I really don't know. I think that once earnings season starts, we're going to see some pretty impressive numbers.
A couple things happen this week. We get jobs reports at the end of this week.
That's right.
And that follows a week in which the unemployment claims fell to 215,000.
Yeah, we're two weeks away from the longest on record being below 300,000.
And you have to go back 45 years to find a single week where in this time period where less people were laid off. So things are really good in the job market out there, and I think that's going to be seen again next week. We'll be back right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam wants to wrap up a few points on the market wrap and the economy. There are some things going on out there that lead me to continue in my bullish stance. We'll never make promises, but I'm still pretty optimistic.
Yeah, despite the recent pullback in technology that we were talking about, it's still the best performing sector this quarter. So
it's up?
Yeah, it is. It gained 4.3%, followed closely by consumer discretionary at 3.6%. Outside of that, the other nine sectors have actually declined this year. The worst performer was telecom, continuing that trend from last year. It's down 10% this year alone. Consumer staple stocks are down 9.8%. And financials actually managed to outperform the overall S&P by only declining 1%. They were the only other one that beat the S&P. So just not a pretty quarter all around.
No, but it was the ninth. Had it closed up, it would have been 9 straight or 10 straight.
Yeah, it was.
It's been moving. Everybody knows since the election what's gone on. And the market can get ahead of itself. Always does. The oldest saying in the book is whatever direction the market's going, it will always overshoot.
Yeah.
Overshoot on the way up, it'll overshoot on the way down. That's the way it is. So the trick to the whole thing is to not panic when a high or a low looks like it's out of whack.
Mm-hmm. The economic data this week, it looked pretty good, actually, kind of continuing the trend we've seen in 2018. The headline was that the fourth quarter 2017 GDP was revised up to 2.9 from 2.5.
And that's a biggie.
The expectation was 2.7, mm-hmm. So the actual was even better. The increase was due to personal consumption and inventory, which means that people are out spending money and businesses are spending money to meet that demand.
Especially in household services.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, the service sector did really well in the household arena during that period. And that means things like Home Depot are going to – home improvement, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
People are doing things that probably have been put off for a long time, and I'll bet you a lot of that did happen because of the bonuses that were paid.
You know, it's funny. Anecdotally, my wife and I were taking a walk the other day, and we're around our neighborhood. Every other house was getting a new fence. It was bizarre. There were 20 fence contractors working in our neighborhood.
Okay.
Yeah, so kind of goes with what you're saying.
Yeah, I really think that pent-up demand is what's driving a lot of the retail-oriented things right now. People put it off when they're uncertain about their jobs. Well, look at the job certainty now, the feeling of comfort people must have now, knowing that you just can't find good help. It's the biggest problem mm-hmm. out there right now is finding good qualified labor.
Definitely. All in all, it was a great report, especially because all of that took place in 2017, pre-tax cut. So you can imagine now with a few extra dollars in their pocket what consumers are going to do this quarter. I think they're going to spend some money.
And you couple that, this is maybe a little bit of a stretch. I don't personally think so. With the problems in the automobile industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know those jerks at GM and Ford and Toyota and all that? They're making these darn cars last for a long time now.
With great gas mileage, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They're selling a quality product. Weird.
Yeah. So that means, I remember I was telling the story about being in the muffler business a long time ago, where we knew the turnover rate was 3 years on a muffler. Well, then it went to 8 to 12 because of the stainless steel. Well, the old days, you'd buy a new Ford or Oldsmobile or whatever, and 2 or 3 years later, you're going to be buying another one as this one was starting to fall apart. Well, nowadays, a three-year-old car is what we start shopping for.
Yeah, that's what we tend to buy, 2 to 4 year old cars in my family, just because you get the best deal on them, and they're going to last another 10 years.
And I really want to put out a personal thank you to all you people who buy or lease new for 2 or 3 years, take the brunt of all that depreciation, and then turn them in so they can get recertified and sold to real people like us.
Yeah, we really appreciate that.
We do indeed.
So another bit of good news, personal income rose in February, showing
a
pretty big gain of 0.4%. And unlike the January increase of the same amount, this one was not aided by any one-time bonuses due to the tax cuts. So in January, we saw a big gain, but a lot of that was the $1,000 bonuses that companies were giving. And in February, all that was done, and we still saw the same increase. So that is pretty significant.
And actual wage levels now are showing some real signs of life, where for about 20 years, nobody was making any more money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said 3%. Adam has the most recent number.
It's actually year-over-year 3.7%.
So that is a good sign, and it is leading to some inflationary pressures. Take advantage of them. How many times have we told you, if you're not 100% happy with what you're making or what you're doing, either quit, demand a raise, shop for a new job, do something about it.
You know, a good strategy, too, is to shop for a new job and then take that offer to your current employer and mm-hmm. say, look, this is what my market value is, mm-hmm. and they'll either meet it or they won't, and if they don't, you go somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you don't necessarily have to even leave your job to get an increase.
Nope, there's nothing wrong with it, people. Demand what you're worth, and nobody's going to just, in most cases, just walk up to you and offer it to you. You got to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
There's a lesson in there, I believe, somewhere.
Another couple quick notes. Personal consumption was increased 0.2% in February. Disposable personal income also increased by 0.4%, and consumer prices increased by 0.2%. We talked about initial jobless claims. Pending home sales rose 3.1% in February after a 5% decline in January. So that's a pretty good number as well.
Yeah. So things are just generally looking pretty good out there. That is what keeps me thinking that this market is a little crazy right now, but it has not interrupted the bull run that we've been on. As we said, Monday we saw the third largest point gain in history. Today's trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. In what years were the first and second largest point gains in history? And that will get you, what do we got this week?
It's a $25 gift certificate to Peter Brook.
All right. So nobody doesn't like Peter Brook.
I don't know how you could.
No. So give us a call. Lines are open. And that's 222-8255. And give us a guess as to when those two really big days were. I got some interesting stats on those two for people who are interested. All right. What month is it?
Right now?
Well, let's say in a few hours.
We're almost in April.
Sure enough. What happens in April?
Don't know.
Flowers bloom.
Okay.
And Uncle Sam wants to hear from you.
Yes.
The 17th is approaching, and there are some things to watch out for. So we'd like to devote a little bit of time to what's going on out there that could cost you some money if you do it wrong. Every week we'll try to do that. One of the new ones now is a scam to steal your W-2 income. And they're kind of sneaky about this, although I guess good crooks are really sneaky these days. But they'll go to the human resources department where you work, and they're conning them into sending reports of large numbers of employees. So an unwary HR person could get caught up in something like this, and a lot of things could go wrong. Well, it's probably not going to get caught before it happens. So if it does happen to you, there is that one thing that we constantly harp on that you should do. If your address is in the state of Florida or the state of Georgia, you are automatically qualified to get an IRS PIN number. Just go to irs.gov and type it in, individual PIN number. That is for your protection. It assures you that every conversation, every written or other communication with IRS will not go forward unless that PIN number is available to the IRS, which means you regain control just when you need it. There's another warning out. Now, this hasn't become a big problem yet, but it could. Some of the most popular tax preparation software online has some weaknesses in it that could allow fishers, you know, fishers, P-F-I-S-H-I-N-G, fishing people. It's where they kind of survey the web all the time. They go fishing for bits of information they can get. Well, the security researchers at Global Cyber Alliance now are claiming that certain popular tax software providers don't have enough email protections to secure them. Among them are H&R Block, TurboTax, FreeTax USA, and Tax Act. And I'll promise you that out of all the people listening to my voice right now, a bunch of them are using those.
I think H&R Block and TurboTax have a huge share of that market.
So. Now, if you want, H&R Block has some locations too. So
yeah.
There are some people who really like to use something like that. I understand it, but get that PIN number. But if you're going to do your taxes online and you want the benefit of not having software that's exposed like that, and the secondary benefit that it's absolutely free, Credit Karma, right?
Yeah, it's a great system, and it is 100% free to file your taxes.
And that,
I've done it.
That system is tried and true by Adam Van Wee. And
we are not affiliated with the company. We receive nothing for that. I just like them and I use them.
And by the way, that's a crying shame, isn't it?
They should call us if they're listening.
They really should. And we'll promote this. All anybody has to do to get a good recommendation from us is live up to your promises and don't overcharge people. That was pretty easy, wasn't it?
Yeah, not so bad.
All right. Well, the noises are coming on. I'm going to go through another few things. Adam has a few things he wants to say. We've got sort of a just pepper you with information day plan today. And I think you find a lot of it interesting. Some of it has to do with taxes, some to do with the market, some to do with the bad people that are out there. But my next one is going to be medical. And this is something I don't know much about yet, but it's come to my attention through my crack research department. I'm going to pass it on to you, and everybody needs to research this for themselves. It's very interesting. Don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. I know where he is, too. He's at my house.
Working hard, I'm
Working
sure.
Working hard. Man, you got to see what is going on at that place. I'm telling you, folks, if you've ever thought it was a good time to just kind of spruce up the curb appeal of your house, he can do it. He's doing it. And I love it. Very nice. Trivia question for the day. This week we saw the third largest point game in history on the Dow. In what years were the first and second largest point game gains in history? And that will get you Peterbrook.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good stuff.
So it's tax time.
And acronyms.
There is a bit of good news if you paid PMI in 2017.
Principal Mortgage Insurance.
That is correct, yes.
And which, if you, by the way, don't ever do that unless you absolutely have to, because
well, you don't
it
have
doesn't
a choice,
take care of you. Know? It takes care of the lender.
Yeah, it's bizarre. You actually pay an insurance to insure somebody else's interest.
Yeah.
I hate it, but they require it if you put down less than 20% in most cases.
It's a conspiracy.
Okay. Anyways, if you paid it in 2017, it was supposed to not be tax deductible under the current tax law, but Congress actually retroactively made it deductible. So if you've already filed, don't worry. You just have to do an amended return. It's very simple. In fact, I know that TurboTax sent out an email this past week telling you how to do it, and I know someone who did it. It was very simple. You do have to mail it in. You cannot file it electronically. Right. But that'll cost you postage. So
it's true? IRS giveth and taketh away?
Apparently, yes.
Who knew?
But if you did pay PMI in 2017 and you've been in your house a while, you may want to take a look, because you can actually get PMI removed from your mortgage. If your home value has gone up to a point where you now have 20% equity, you just basically need to prove it to your mortgage company. They will probably require that you get an appraisal somewhere between $300 and $500, which if you then find out that you have that and your PMI goes away, you can pay that back. I mean, it pays for itself in about 3 months. So it's a really good idea to take a look at that if you think you are anywhere near that 20% equity in your home.
Yeah, and this is being aided and abetted a lot by the thank you very excellent real estate market.
Absolutely.
There are two ways to improve your debt to equity ratio. Pay down debt or have the value of your house go up.
Mm-hmm.
And the values of houses are going up rather sharply. And if you're not paying attention, you might be surprised what your place is worth.
Yeah, and paying that extra $100-$150 a month, that's a big deal. I mean, over the course of a year, that's over a grand. So that'll go right in your pocket.
Yeah, look around at what's selling in your neighborhood, see what they're asking. That's your start. And if it sounds like you might be getting there, then I'd approach the lender right away and see, I'd really like to get rid of this thing. Can I do it now? Am I close? And if you hit that ratio and it can be verified by an acceptable appraisal, they have no choice but to just remove that.
That's correct.
So it's money in your pocket. Once again, nobody's going to knock on your door and hand you this stuff, except us, of course, but we only hand it to you on your radio. You actually have to do it.
Yeah, they're not going to propose it to you. You have to be proactive about it.
You know me and my sayings. I got a million of them. One of my favorites is, you never get anything you don't ask for.
That's words to live by right there.
I believe it is. All right. We said something about acronyms, didn't we? How about a DNR? And I'm not talking about the Department of Natural Resources. I'm talking about that document that we all are pretty sure we should have called a Do Not Resuscitate. And what it means, what it's supposed to mean, and how it's being interpreted, happen to be diverging in some places right now. Now, I don't know that everybody out there feels like I do, but I don't want to be on a ventilator if I'm brain dead. No Terry Schiavo stuff for me, ever. So I have a DNR. But according to townhall.com, you have a little problem in some of the hospitals, and some of those are right here in Florida. The R in DNR means resuscitate. Well, CPR has an R in it too. And that R stands for resuscitation. Some people now are interpreting you having a DNR as meaning you don't want CPR.
That doesn't sound right.
Let's say you inhale a little too much smoke, or you get something lodged in your throat and all of a sudden you stop breathing. And somebody does a Heimlich maneuver or a cardiopulmonary respiration.
Resuscitation,
CPR. And they are all of a sudden afraid that they're going to get sued, or it's in a hospital and their procedure says, no, a DNR means you can't do that. Well, yes, you can. Please help me.
Did this actually happen somewhere?
This is happening, and right now there's statistical evidence. Hip fracture surgery patients who opt for DNRs reduce their chances of surviving their hospital stay. At Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, researchers found that mortality was over 2 times greater for patients with DNRs than for those without them.
Wow.
That, folks, scares me. So I don't know what's going to happen exactly. I'm going to consult some medical authorities and some legal authorities this week. I wanted to bring it up because we just found it. But I want to know how it's being interpreted or misinterpreted. It does say here a better way to prevent becoming a captive of medical machinery is to make a living will, a legal document limiting what hospitals can do. Well, most of us have living wills, but I'm not sure how they're going to integrate under this particular problem right now. And I want to see if the legal profession and the medical profession are coming to some terms that we can all adopt where we will not be misunderstood. I do not want to go out of this life with something that is so relatively trivial that I can be brought back 100% with a simple procedure. I do not want to be hanging on when it's over for me. There has to be a way to define the difference and to tell people exactly what it is that you care about. So it's going to require some document revisions, probably. Going to require some hospital training, and it's obviously something that's going to have to be handled as a national priority. So HHS or whoever better be getting some stuff together on it. This is the absolute first I've heard of it this week. I don't have enough information to really fill everybody in well, but I will be looking and finding more and more, and I'll at least report what the experts that I can get in touch with are saying about it. But it's something to think about and probably be scared about. All right. Now, taxes that don't involve this year. Maybe I'll skip that one. I'll do it. Congress has offered up a new way to file. Remember how many times were we told that you're going to file your tax returns on a postcard? How many times did I call BS on that one? Every time I heard it.
Ridiculous.
Ain't it gonna happen? Some people will, some people won't. Ain't it gonna happen? Well, Congress took a step, and they say it's going to help. We'll see. And of course, there were some things I didn't like in that thing, too. Like, they didn't get rid of AMT, which is going to require that a lot more people don't have this opportunity. Anyway, they now have, they always had a 1040 EZ form, which was what they were referring to as the postcard tax filing. Who couldn't use that? A filer who was 65 or older, people with one or more dependents, anyone with taxable income over $100,000, anyone who receives dividends from stocks or mutual funds, anyone claiming a capital gain, anyone claiming a tax credit other than the earned income tax credit, anybody paying a premium tax on an insurance premium, or anybody with income other than wages, salaries, or tips. Boy, I think we just cut out more than 10%, huh?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. All right, so now they've come up with a partial solution called a 1040 SR, which stands for senior, because the only people who can file it are 65 and over. Now, will this help? A little bit, maybe, yes. Is it a giant step toward solving the problem that we were promised about 90% of us would file on a postcard? Not even close. But they did cover a couple of those little loopholes that more and more people over 65 will actually be able to do this. But you also remember at the same time they were telling us we could file on a postcard. Somehow from the whole argument was dropped the term simplification. It became the Tax Act, Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Didn't say Tax Simplification Act anywhere, because it really did a lot to go backwards on that one. So I'm still something of a fan, but it's not what it was purported to be. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is the Manly Financial Hour.
So you...
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Our trivia question remains out there. This week saw the third largest point gain in Dow Jones Industrial Average history. In what years were the first and second largest gains, point gains, ever? You know, every once in a while, you start to hear it again. It's been happening over the last couple of weeks. Cry for, well, people ought to pay for their speeding tickets and parking tickets and all that, according to their income. You've been hearing that? He's shaking his head over
there. I've heard it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some very vocal people bring this out every once in a while, and I think a lot of them are elected officials looking to raise revenue for whatever outfit they're working for. And it bothers me every time that it's even given airtime. So I'm going to comment on it, I guess. Class envy is really nothing new, but it's getting closer and closer now to being better described as class hatred. You see it all the time, and you hear for calls about stupid things like income inequality. Well, income inequality is not a problem, people. It is an opportunity. If you don't like how much you're making, you have every opportunity in the world to go out there and fix it. That's not true in every country. You know, some countries still have a pretty rigid caste structure.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. Nobody over here is born into a low position in life and has to stay there forever. And consequently also, people who are very wealthy sometimes lose it. You know, there's an old saying among the uber wealthy, rags to riches to rags in three generations.
Mm-hmm.
The entrepreneur makes the fortune, the next generation maintains the fortune, and the next generation blows the fortune.
It happens all the time.
Really does. If you look at the millionaires and billionaires list about every 5 to 10 years, you'll see a massive amount of turnover. In fact, we just minted more millionaires in the last year, I think, than in the last several before. 1,700
That's right.
new ones or something like that. It's really quite impressive what an economy like ours will do. Well, variable fines are nothing more than a representation of class warfare, and class warfare is ubiquitous in the 21st century America, unfortunately. But perhaps the most fundamental form of class envy or class hatred or class warfare, whatever you want to call it, lies in the U.S. tax code. The so-called progressive income tax has produced the current system of disincentives, in which there are seven tax rates, escalating according to the income of the taxpayer. We should probably be fair and say that today's top marginal rate of 37% is down sharply from that in 1944, which reached 94%. There are also stories about foreign countries where the effective rate reached over 100%, so people would just simply stop working at that point. Thankfully, most items are not subject to income-based pricing, and yet, strangely, wealthier people generally pay more than do the less well-off, but it's based on their purchasing preferences. Higher-income people generally buy larger houses, more expensive cars. They take more exotic vacations and so on, but they do so voluntarily. No one holds a millionaire at gunpoint and makes him or her buy a Lexus rather than a Chevrolet. Further, once they own the car, the gasoline they put in there costs the same as a poor person, octane level per octane level, and that doesn't change. It is merely a choice. You want a higher performance engine? Yeah, you're going to pay more for your gas, but you'll pay the same amount that everybody with a higher octane need does. And that, we have a name for that. It's called America. Growing up, as I did in rural Wisconsin, I had my share of class envy, or as we called it back then, ambition. We all knew if we studied, worked hard, and took some chances that a better life we desired it was available to us. After all, this was America, the land of opportunity. No caste system, purely a results-driven economic reality. Among the tenets of Americanism is our desire and ability to keep our personal information private. Although we've surrendered too much already, some of it we didn't even know we did, the desire and ability to not share our personal economics involuntarily is indigenous to our people. Surrendering this information to a traffic court judge is anathema to our American way of life. Next time someone proposes a variable fine system to you, laugh in his or her face, but then keep an eye on them and make sure they never run for office or never get elected due to an uneducated population. Speeding fines should be proscribed by state and local law, variable only by the degree of the offense. While we're on the topic, I thought you might enjoy some little speeding ticket trivia, and I'll thank the website joetaxpayer.com. Ever heard of that one?
No, I have not.
I hadn't either. It's pretty fascinating. The first known speeding ticket went to the wife of the Canadian Prime Minister who was driving 10 over in 1910.
All right.
An average traffic cop earns $75,000 and generates $200,000 in fine revenue.
It's a good deal for the government.
No kidding. 65 tickets are written on average every minute in the U.S. alone.
Wow.
In 18 states, judges can add jail time to your fine. That's a little scary. The average speeding ticket will add $300 annually to the cost of insurance for the driver. That's the gift that keeps on taking.
Ooh, that hurts.
The fastest ticket in the U.S. was issued in Texas in 2003 to the driver of a Koenigsegg CC8S, which is a Swedish sports car that looked a lot like a Ferrari when I saw the picture, who was going 242 in a 75 zone.
Wow, that's moving.
That's moving. The top end of that car from the factory specs is 240.
Apparently they were wrong.
242 and a 75. Fighting your ticket is generally only 1% successful. Hiring an attorney can raise those odds all the way up to 5% success. For a price, of course. This generates $27 million in annual legal fees. Germany has variable fines. The highest speeding ticket can exceed, you want to guess?
I have no idea.
$15 million.
That's pretty steep.
Back to my point about progressive fines. Don't let it happen.
Yeah. Speaking about millionaires, the U.S. actually added 700,000 new millionaires in 2017.
I was under a little.
Yeah, a little bit. That's up to 11 million total. And in 2016, No, I'm sorry. Earlier than that, it jumped from, there were 6 million in 2006. So, I'm sorry, in 2009. So that is almost doubled in the last 9 years.
Miracles of modern capitalism.
Yeah, well, a lot of that has to do with stock market performance in the last
of
9 years.
Sure.
But, and yeah, so the more money you had invested, the better you did. And it says that the more wealthy millionaires became much more wealthy. And
I read a book by Andrew Tobias back in the 90s called The Only Investment Guide You'll Ever Need. I remember the opening line like it was yesterday. Let's define a millionaire. That's a guy with $5 million in cash. Let's be reasonable. Oh, and by the way, that book, it was called The Only Investment Guide You'll Ever Need. He wrote a sequel. New Medicare cards. I've told you before, they're coming. They're going to eliminate your Social Security number from the Medicare card. Thank goodness. The first areas that are around D.C. and out in the Northwest are being mailed out April to June of this year. We're sometime down the road, so you won't even begin to see them here until sometime after July. We'll keep you posted. When you get it, you can immediately switch over to it. You can do either or for a while, but when you destroy your old Medicare card that has your Social Security number on it, make sure you destroy it well. Crush, shred it, burn it, whatever you want to do. We're trying to get rid of using those things, and it only makes sense. All right, this week we saw the sixth largest increase in the Dow Jones Industrial Average ever. In 2008, both the first and the second largest gains in history occurred, and they both occurred in October. That I found pretty amazing.
What was the percentage on those?
This is even more amazing. The largest one in history was, well, first off, let's start with this one. This one added 2.84%. The largest one added 11.1%, and
wow,
the second largest one added 10.9%, and those both took place on one day. And if you hadn't gotten back in since you were scared to death in 2007, 2008, and 9, imagine what you missed. And think about that, because that truly is my point. Have a wonderful Easter, everybody. We'll see you next week at this time. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.